It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The madness grows in this sick society. Posers laud shallow youth for their empty fads. Phonies seek out vain celebrities for instruction. Slaves glorify globalist parasites for their stolen wealth and power. Politicians are puppets, not leaders. Sheep wear masks and accept deadly vaccines. In these dark times, the wise must lead us. So we call the Wisdom Circle. Each week, Scorpio and Giuseppe will call upon the sages, the learned, the pragmatic, to discuss the great problems and distill the great solutions. Here is the leader of the Wisdom Circle. Scorpio.
Okay, hello, welcome to the Wisdom Circle. I am here with my co-host, Giuseppe, from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing really well, Scorpio. I'm looking forward to 2 hours with our esteemed guest, a man who does have a lot of wisdom and pragmatism and life experience. So Michael Ivey is going to be a great new member of the Wisdom Circle.
Oh, great. Well, let's go ahead and bring Michael on. Michael, are you there, sir?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you loud and clear.
We can hear you.
Oh, excellent. Okay, that's good. Hey, thanks for having me on today. I don't know how wise I am, but I've got some information at least.
Well, there you go. That's very cool, Michael. So what do you... The Wisdom Circle, what I found interesting, Michael, is why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? I think you grew up in Fort Worth, Texas. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct. Relative to the subject of spirituality, I was born in 49 and grew up through the 50s and early 60s attending a Baptist church down there. And do you just want that subject, or do you want my, like, stuff like that?
Well, I'm just curious, especially you mentioned when we were talking before the show that you had gotten interested in the spiritual teachings of Meher Baba. And how did a good old boy from Fort Worth, Texas, come across Meher Baba?
Well, that's a good question, and it doesn't have an easy answer other than the fact that I always had an extremely curious mind, and the area that curiosity was worked out in first was probably the biggest one that you can imagine, that being, what is this all about? What is living here? What is this creation? What is life in a human body? What is this all about?
So, right,
by the time I was, 14 or 15 or so, I understood that a lot of the things that I was being taught in the Baptist church only went so far. These people didn't know very much, really. I mean, I could definitely appreciate the life and sayings of Jesus and the concept of God. But so I didn't reject those in any way. I just knew that I wasn't getting what I needed. So I started branching out and was gradually attracted to Eastern concepts over the years. It didn't take that many years. It's probably by the time I was 17, I started getting into Eastern religions and the things that they taught, and the popular books of the time, like Autobiography of a Yogi and Be Here Now and those things. And at that time, Meher Baba was sort of in the culture as a result of Pete Townsend's being a follower of his, and Pete Townsend's being such a star with the Who at the time. But I never paid much attention to it until I actually picked up a book that had things that come directly from Meher Baba in it. And that was at a metaphysical bookstore right across from campus in Austin, Texas. The name of the book was The Everything and the Nothing. And I will probably read a couple of excerpts from that book. And I was 22 when that happened. And something about everything that I had read up to that point and the statements that were in that book just radically captivated me. So the first thing I wanted to know, this was in 1972. The first thing I wanted to know after I finished reading that book was, wherever this guy is, I'm going there. And so I called, there's a major center in Myrtle Beach for Meher Baba. So I called them and was told that, well, sorry, but he dropped the body in 1969. So I was not able to go there, but what I did was start an extensive reading stint where I'd finish one book associated with Meher Baba and pick up another one and read practically nothing else for about 10 or 11 years. I finally went to India for the first time in 1988 because I was at a place in my life that was possible. And I realized that a lot of the people that had lived in daily contact with Meher Baba that I'd read about in these books and read statements and books from them, they were still alive over there. So I decided to go there. And my first trip was in 1988, and I've made 6 total trips to India since then.
Oh, wow. So how has India changed over the years? And what are your thoughts of going as American to Indian, especially with new eyes for the first time?
Well, the first time I went there was a trip in itself, because if you've never been in a very third world country before, and you're certainly suddenly plopped down in it, and I didn't go with anybody. I didn't have a guide or anything. I just arrived at the Bombay airport, and it was pretty wild. It was only by the grace of God, I should say, that I found my other connections and made it to where Mer Baba's tomb and place is, which is about 50 miles to the northwest of the town of Pune. The largest town there is Ahmednagar. But after that first time, I was there about 3 weeks at the time. And then when I came back, it was like experiencing culture shock coming back the other way. Because if you get used to what's happening there, and I only had 3 weeks, but when I came back to the States, I realized what a radical difference existed between cultures in the world, and it was like culture shock in reverse. So, where do you want me to go?
Oh, Dave, do you have any questions? Are you there, Dave?
Oh, yeah, sure. Michael, how would you, describe the differences between your guru's teachings and say Yogananda? What would be the differences there?
Well, rather than getting into something that specific, and tell you the truth, it's been decades since I've been through Yogananda, and I generally know what he was about. But what I'd like to do is sort of give some groundwork first. Is that okay?
Of course, yeah.
All right. The first thing I'd like to do is to sort of give a definition and talk a little bit about the concept of God itself, himself, herself, itself. And a definition that I would give is that God is existence itself, infinite and eternal reality. All of us know who have been into spirituality that it's really impossible for the human mind to conceive of and hardly even to imagine what God is. And yet we speak of God almost every day. And over the years, I've found that there are three. So knowing that we can't really conceive of God, there have been ways of teaching about God to help us imagine what that is over the years. And I've found that there are three great images or analogies or metaphors for God. And the first one is the sun. And in the case of, the physical sun, the sun is the source of all light and heat in our physical world. Not all light. I mean, we get light from stars, but relatively speaking, the sun is the source. And crossing over to God, the sun is an image of the source of consciousness and being. And there's one little image that I came up with one day in the kitchen while I was talking to my mother about this. And it has to do, imagine that you have a flashlight, and in the other hand, I was in the kitchen, remember, there was a kitchen colander, those half circle bowls with holes.
Yeah, pasta strainer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Strainer. It's not a strainer like net, but the one that has holes.
Right, the metal kind where you kind of swirl around the spaghetti.
Exactly. So imagine you're over a table and you shine the flashlight through the colander, and there on the table, you have little dots of light, right? So that is an image that is used with the metaphor of the sun, because if you imagine that the little dots of light on the table are each one of us, are individuals in the physical world, to the little dots of light, we're all separate. We're all contained within ourselves. And all the other little dots of light are separate. But the source of the light is the same. So that's that one. The second metaphor is that of the ocean. But the ocean of God has no bottom and no top and no shores. You might say that imagine fish who live in the ocean but never leave the ocean. Their life, their very life is in the ocean and depends on the ocean, but they don't know that. They don't know what it is. They just know that they're in this. Well, they don't even know that. They probably conceive of themselves only as fish, even the mammals of the sea. And the analogy being that we live in the ocean of God, but are similarly unaware that that's the whole foundation basis of our very being. An analogy that I'm just going to use the term Baba. When I say Baba, that means Meher Baba. That Baba uses at times was that there is the ocean of God, shoreless, bottomless, topless, and each of us are like drops in that ocean of consciousness and being. And I'll get into this more later, but the factor that keeps us experiencing that we are only one little drop and not the ocean itself. In other words, we're only aware of our individual surroundings in the physical world is in the concept of the mental body. I'll get back to that later. But of the three, the best, I believe, of the main analogies, analogs for God has to do with the cycle of sleep and waking that we go through every day. You guys with me so far?
Oh, yeah. I'm extremely fluent in these spiritual concepts. How about you, Scorpio?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. The cycle of sleep and waking. Every day, we go through this cycle through three distinct states of consciousness. Our waking consciousness, which presumably we're in right now. Then when we go to bed at night, we go through a dream state on our way, so to speak, to the deep sleep state in which we're not aware of anything at all. And then back the other way, when we wake up from deep sleep through the dream state, then back to our waking consciousness. So the analog here is that the analog, when you think about being in the dream state, when we're dreaming, you could say, in a sense, that we create a world within our own consciousness, within our own minds, every time we dream. And when we are experiencing that dream state, we, to a large extent, if not completely, experience it as being real. In a dream, we think that which around us is real. We never realize our experiences in the dream weren't real until we wake up out of the dream. So,
well, it's, you know, I think some dreaming, you're actually astrally projecting to possibly another place and experiencing real things. What do you think about that concept?
Well, I think that's possible. The dream state holds different possibilities, but for the point of the analogy here, I just want to point out that all humans pass through this cycle of three distinct states of consciousness every day. And the analogy is that we have ascending states of consciousness from the deep sleep state, in which there is no consciousness, we're not aware of anything, to the dream state, which is a relative state of reality, and then the wide awake state, which we call reality. And the analog is that God passes through the same process. Within God, there is the state of nothing, in which absolutely nothing exists. But there is the process, or in the East, they call it a lahar, which is translated as whim. A whim arises in God, and he, what you might say, dreams the universe. He creates the universe in God's imagination. And, you know, flipping back momentarily to my being brought up in the Christian church, there's a phrase that everybody who has much contact with the Christian church is familiar with, and that is that we are made in the image of God. So to me, that's been misinterpreted literally as meaning that our bodies look something like God, which is silly to me. But it makes sense if you retranslate it and say we are made in the imaging power of God, or in God's imagination. So the entire creation is what might be called in this analogy the mighty dream of God, which is the universe. Okay, break for questions.
Yeah, I love that metaphor. In fact, many years ago, I wrote a song called "Candle in the Rain," and part of the chorus there, it's a two part verse, and the second, the second melody vocal line is "The dreamer dreams a dream," which is, you know, that's such a beautiful phrase to kind of embrace the same concept you're describing. So yeah, it's really, it's amazing how so much of the modern society, the Western world, wants to just trap you in your mind. And that's the only reality. And, you know, I'm also well-trained as a doctor of Oriental medicine in the Taoist pursuits, you know, the whole idea of the sacred triangle of body, mind, and spirit. And that's what's sorely lacking from the Western world for a lot of people, is that connection between mind, body, and spirit. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, especially the spirit part. I mean, we have all kinds of speculations about the mind, and we have our physical sciences and things that are objectively seen with the body, but the spiritual part falls way behind in most concepts of what's going on in the world right now.
Oh, absolutely. And especially, you know, the medical establishment wants us to believe you are your brain. That's all you are in terms of consciousness, is your brain. There's no spirit behind it. And the body and the brain are all there is. And it's a very deliberate attempt to stop human evolution, I believe.
Oh, yeah. There are some in the science world who are kind of waking up to the ridiculousness of the concept of the brain producing consciousness. Like, that's what all this transhuman stuff one of their underlying main concepts is that a certain level of complexity of neural nets create consciousness. So over the last 20 or 30 years, we've had, I don't know how many TV shows and movies that state that basically the plot is AI becomes conscious, or some cyborgs actually have consciousness. But like I said, there are some scientists. There is a great book that was published about 2 years ago, and it was from a science and psychology perspective, and it was called An End to Upside Down Thinking, subtitled Dispelling the Myth That the Brain Produces Consciousness. Yes. And the implications that it has in everyday life. So I always just shake my head at, and I was very happy to see that book, because it comes from sort of a standard scientific mode and not just a religious spiritual mode.
You know, it's funny, right, Michael and Scorpio, and I find it pretty offensive that when a scientist can discover something that the consciousness isn't solely in the brain, then all of a sudden it's real. Where in reality, Oriental medicine and the Taoists for 6,000 years have realized that the brain is the master computer that runs the body and animates the pole, which is the corporeal soul. But in reality, the consciousness, as in feeling and as in empathy, and is in the heart, which is called the Shen. And there's also another gut brain. Now suddenly they're realizing there's other brains, and it's so sickening that the allopathic corporate hegemony, you know, began 110 years ago with the Rockefeller successful attempt to control mainstream medicine via chemicals using their waste products from the petroleum distillation, turning gas from oil. And suddenly they had all these waste products. We should do something. Let's make it into medicine. And they hired two lowlife brothers, global parasites, the Flexnor brothers.
To
go around.
Flexnors.
It's oy vey. You can't use homeopathy. You can't use naturopathy. You've got to use the Rockefeller chemicals. It's just so, and you know, God bless that guy for writing the book, but you know, I'm so tired of, oh, we just discovered this. No, you just are in a very narrow track of reality. And
That's great, Giuseppe. Yeah. And you know, the way I see it too is the brain is what allows the consciousness or the soul access to this dimensional plane. It's nothing to do with the consciousness itself.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There was a great book that I read back in about 1980, and it was called The Holographic Paradigm. And in it again presented an analogy, and this analogy being the analogy of the hologram. And I'm sure you guys know how holograms work. There's a beam of light that comes from a source, and it passes through a holographic plate. And on the other side of the holographic plate, there is the image of what was used to originally program the holographic plate, right? And so the analogy is that the brain acts much like a holographic plate. It interprets, so to speak, the I don't know what to call it, reality that comes from within into a three-dimensional world in which we think we're living.
Oh, there's another phenomenal book. I read it decades ago, and I keep buying it and loaning it to people, and I keep forgetting to get it back. But it's by a fellow named Michael Talbert, and it was called The Holographic Universe. And he was a brilliant thinker journalist who had a really great gift for boiling down the complex concepts that you're just describing, Michael, of the holographic universe and how this is all a projection. And he puts it into a very plain spoken English that's very easy to read. And sadly, he was cranking out a lot of brilliant books, and then he died of cancer very young. It's really sad. But I highly recommend The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot, T-A-L-B-O-T.
Yeah, yeah. I read that one about that same time, too, and it presents the same overall concept.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's see.
Well, it's funny how these AI people and these transhumanists think that they're going to somehow create a computer that has consciousness, and that someday we'll see, Bill Gates' disembodied head, in a big vat of some kind of liquid connected to a quantum computer, and that'll make him immortal. Pretty twisted thinking.
What was that movie that Johnny Depp starred in which he was some computer bigwig and they uploaded his consciousness into the web or something? Do you remember that?
Oh, that was just a couple of years ago. Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
Seems like it was like early 2000s. But anyway, yeah, getting back to Mayor Baba, there's a book, one of the many awesome books that talk about his life and have some of his actual direct statements in them. There's a book called Listen Humanity. I think it was the third one that I read. And one of the essays in that book starts with this discussion right here. He starts talking about, and this is in Baba's words, so they're quite heavy. He starts talking about current scientific understandings of the brain and consciousness. And they all had something to do with the state of the brain producing consciousness. So when Baba ticks these off, goes through about three of them, he sums up saying what these explanations of the brain and consciousness have in common is that they are all radically wrong. So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, he was saying this. I think that essay was given back in the early 50s.
Yeah, 1957. I've looked it up.
Cool. Oh, you mean the year of that book?
This is interesting.
Go ahead, Scorpio.
Well, what I'm finding interesting is that, we're seeing this deliberate attempt to sort of side rail humanity away from spiritual understanding, away from spiritual growth, and science is the new God, the new religion.
That's absolutely true.
Absolutely. Great point, Scorpio.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen people who have drawn parallels between religious concepts and religious dogma to how people relate to, I have to put it in quotes, quote, science, unquote, these days. There's nothing wrong with the scientific method as far as discovering physical and semi-physical things about the world. But you're absolutely right. It's gone so far as to replace deeper truths about our existence.
Well, and we're being bombarded by false science. We're being told things are science when they're not. Like, these computer models that said, 2 million people are going to die of COVID unless we shut everyone down and make them wear a mask. That was not science. That was just pure speculation. And the same could be said for this climate change hysteria that we're under too.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. As soon as the controllers of the world realized how people trusted science and just the reference to science and scientists more than anything else, it took them no time at all to translate that into propaganda.
It's stunning how much the human mechanism is imprinted and hardwired to want to turn anything that has a little bit of awe into a religion. For example, right now we have the great religion of the high priest of the white lab coat who can give you the sacrament of vaccination. And similarly, like above that are the real cardinals of mystery, the scientists. And, you know, it's just sad. And then the more venal religion is the worship of celebrity. And I want what the heck is that big chick's name? Taylor Swift to tell me how to live my life. It's just so insane. And especially when the solution is so obvious, you quiet your mind, you breathe a bit, and you either pray or you meditate, whatever you want to call it, but you listen to that subtle whisper of the divine. It's there for everybody, but not very many people do that.
Yep. You want me to get back to Mayor Baba?
Sure, absolutely.
We've got 2 hours, right? Or this show is
90, 90 minutes until 2 p.m. Eastern, correct?
Yeah. Oh, it's 90 minutes. Okay.
No. We're 30 in already, so we have 90 minutes to go.
Yeah, right. There's going back to my first having picked up this book called The Everything and the Nothing. Maybe I'm trying to decide where I should go right now, but I think I'll go here first. There were some statements in it that were so powerful that they made a big impression on me. Obviously, I've been into Mayor Baba ever since 1972. But one of them goes right along with what we were saying earlier about the analogy of the dream state and creation and God. And the name of it is Awake Dream State, meaning the state that we're in right now, awake dream state to real awake state. The title differentiates between our awake state, which it calls a dream state, to the real awake state, which is the wide awake state of God knowing himself. And I'd like to read this. It'll take about 2.5 minutes, though. Is that okay?
Sure, go for it.
All right. He's addressing people there. Oh, by the way, Mayor Baba was silent the last 44 years of his life. I'll get into that in a minute. But so when I say he says something, what he's doing is spelling it out on an alphabet board or communicating with gestures. And so that's what you're hearing right now. You are all sitting here before me, each one asserting his separate existence from the other. You come from different levels of society. You possess varied physical and mental abilities and aptitudes. Through the ego mind, you have become individualized, and the one indivisible soul is infinitely divided. But the soul never really becomes divided. It ever remains one and the same. You are really the infinite soul, but you identify yourself with a finite mind, and so you have to suffer. You have your moments of happiness and sorrow, whether your pains outweigh your pleasures or your pleasures outweigh your pains. You worry all day about something or the other until your finite existence retreats at night into sound sleep. There, you unconsciously merge into the infinite. In sound sleep, you completely forget yourself and your surroundings, your thoughts and emotions. But this respite is short-lived. From the sound sleep state, you come down to the normal awake state. And as you come, you necessarily have to pass through a dream state, even though it be for only a fraction of a second. Now, at one time, you have a very happy and sweet dream in which your ideal of happiness is fulfilled. But being a dream, it lasts only a little while, and waking pains you so much that you sigh, "What a pity! It was only a dream!" At some other time, you have a horrible dream in which you experience great suffering. Time seems an eternity. As you wake up, you feel such relief that you say, "Oh, thank God it was only a dream after all." In the dream state, you enjoy and suffer. When you wake, you realize that your enjoyment and suffering was nothing but a dream, an illusion. But I want you to know that your present state of consciousness, which you call being awake, when compared to the real awake state, is nothing but a dream state. Your life is a dream within the mighty dream of God, which is the universe.
Right. The dreamer dreams the dream, the holographic universe. That's such ponderous material. But Michael, I know you also are the curator of an awesome email list that sends out, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3 or 4 stories a day that are really real news, not the propagandistic lies of the corporate lamestream fake news media. What possessed you to begin to do an email, a curated email list like that?
Oh, it just evolved gradually from my sending stuff to friends and people I knew. I probably started doing that seriously outside the norm in the wake of 9/11. As soon as I understood what happened on 9/11, I mean, to the extent that I knew that everything that we were told was a lie. So back then there weren't nearly as many sources of information, but there were some good ones. So I started sending these things to just people I knew, and then other people who could identify with them. So some couldn't, and said, you know, "Don't send me this kind of stuff anymore. I don't want to see it." Right. But many of them, you know, passed them on, and other people wanted to hear what I had to say. And so it gradually developed like that. And after I was pretty obsessed with 9/11 information. I was a professional investigator in my professional life. So
no kidding. A private investigator, a PI.
No, I was not private. I was part of a civil enforcement structure that investigated charges of discrimination in employment and housing and public accommodations. I first worked for the state of West Virginia in that capacity, and then for the city of Fort Worth, Texas, when I went back there. And then gradually over the years, I was good at it, so I became the director of that agency and became a teacher of investigators. And so that was my professional life. I did 22 years in that field, but sadly,
you had to keep turning yourself in as a white supremacist and moving on to a new employment.
Yeah. That's why I had to quit. I bring that up just to say that both when I was young and, like I told you before, had this burning curiosity to understand what living in a human body was about. And then that curiosity, the drive for truth, got me to really enjoy the investigative work, because every situation you get into is that. It's looking for what's the truth of this situation. That carried over. And so when I retired from that, shortly after that, 9/11 happened. And I got pretty obsessive about trying to understand what actually happened in 9/11. And that was the bulk of my my mailing list for several years. And that's when I first heard of Jim Fetzer, as a matter of fact, probably about 2006.
You know, it's interesting. How quickly did you realize that 9/11 was a monumental false flag? I mean, I knew it the instance we were living in New Mexico at the time, in southwest New Mexico, in a little area called Silver City, New Mexico. And we were 20 miles outside in an even smaller little town at the base of the Mimbres Mountains called San Lorenzo. And my wife was at work and she called me. I was self-employed at the time. And she, you got to turn on the TV. There's America's being attacked. And I turned it on and in time to see the second plane hit the tower. And I'm like, that can't be real. A plane which would have been which has a huge dent from a goose when it hits a goose can't run into and slice into a concrete and steel reinforced building. And for years, when I was my one big corporate job was during the CD-ROM and CD audio manufacturing boom of the early 90s, especially CD-ROM. And I used to have to go to New York monthly for big clients. And I had been in one of my clients was in the World Trade Center. And I had been in there, you know, dozens of times for meetings. And they would always talk about this is so reinforced, you know, even a plane hit the Empire State Building, blah, blah, blah. And if this is even stronger. So I knew firsthand people were bragging about how strong World Trade Centers was, because the meetings I was attending were up on like the 70th floor. And I'm like, you know, looking out, it's like, wow, we're really high up. And so I knew immediately. How about yourself?
Well, I am mildly embarrassed to say I did not get it for about, let's see, September 11, October, November, for about almost 3 months before it started coming to me. I think in my case, the factor that really put a big red question mark over my head was a video presentation that I watched from Michael Rupert. Since departed Michael Rupert.
I knew Michael Rupert from San Diego. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Tell us about that, Scorpio. How'd you know him?
Well, you know, I met him when he was having problems. He had exposed a lot of different things, and he was being harassed and was sort of on the run. And he ended up staying with this lady I knew up in North County, San Diego, kind of hiding out. And that's how I met him.
Oh, wow.
Did you know Sophia Smallstorm back then?
No, I've never met her. No,
She's also a San Diego resident, has been for all these years.
Yeah.
at one point... Well, this gets back to Mayor Baba. He is known as Avatar Mayor Baba. And Sophia's internet sales store is called Avatar Products. So I don't remember why I came across it in the first place, but I wrote to her asking if there was any connection between Mayor Baba and her. And there wasn't, but boy, did she ever start blowing my mind with 9/11 evidence. At the time, she was making her first famous documentary called 9/11 Mysteries. And she liked talking to me about the evidence, because I'd studied it for about 5 years at that point. And so she would call me frequently while she was making that, and and send me sections of it to review for just to get my feedback. And so to this day, if you go to the end of the video of 9/11 Mysteries, you'll find my name there.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I have a
I never saw her that interview. What conclusions did she come to? Just like the big picture, did she think that there was no planes or what? Was there video fakery? Where did she go with that?
It's been a long time since I've watched that, but my memory is that it was just a to Z compendium. I think it lasted a little over an hour of the various facts and evidence that didn't fit into the big picture. And she didn't, I don't think she drew any conclusions. She did. She definitely, she might've implied some, culpability for some of that here and there. But I don't think she went there to a great degree, but it was one of the first best movies that came out that had lots of evidentiary facts and questioning in it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I forget the name of the video that came out that stated that Israel was heavily involved in it. I can't remember the name of the video, but that came out maybe a couple years after 9/11.
That one called Loose Change, that's pretty famous. Or was it
Loose Change?
No, not Loose Change. This was a lot more kind of looking at the Zionist aspect, let's say.
They definitely were part of it, that's for sure.
You know, I didn't see a lot of that until several years later, maybe like 2009 or 10, direct implications and statements implicating the the Sayanim network in the United States.
Oh yeah, the Sayanim. Yeah. And worse than the Sayanim is the dual citizen traitors like Dov Zakheim and Richard Pearl and Wolfowitz and all those guys. Holy cow.
Yeah, Dov Zakheim was a rabbi, wasn't he?
Yeah, Rabbi Dov. Yeah.
Right. Right. And I think he quit his Pentagon position and moved to Israel shortly thereafter.
That's exactly right.
Seems like I heard recently that he was back in the States. I guess enough time has gone by so he's not sweating people finding out what he actually did.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's reminiscent of George Bush's famous statement about if people knew what we had done, they would chase us down the street and string us up.
Yeah, too bad that didn't happen.
Well, it still might. You know, this next hour, I want to get into this COVID hysteria that we're living through. And, you know, I really think if this one fraud is exposed, because it was so big, we could end up with some kind of Nuremberg-style trials in the future, because this is a crime against humanity.
Now, if we go like into 9/11 and COVID stuff, that's getting pretty far afield from spirituality. But I'm fine with that if that's where you guys want to go, because I have come to believe that the pursuit of truth, even if it's truth in the world, is a form of a spiritual exercise.
Oh yeah, that's the Wisdom Circle isn't solely about spirituality. It's about pragmatism, truth, wisdom. So yeah, no, let's talk about all kinds of stuff, because you're, especially the fact that you're a trained investigator, I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on a lot of the modern escapades.
All right. Let's see. So how much time do we have?
About 3 minutes till the top of the hour.
3 minutes? All right. Let me go a little bit more with the straight spirituality stuff. I don't know how much people in this side of the world don't really know much about Mayor Baba. People on the other side of the world, almost all of them do. It's a funny bifurcation in that way. Something I say to people who don't know or practically nothing, say, just on the basis of the biography of his life, the life that that guy lived was one of the most amazing lives in the 20th century. He lived from 1894 to 1969, and people all over the world, and he stated as much, that he was the avatar of this cycle, and that he was God incarnate. He was God in human form. He was the consciousness of God living a life here to tell us where it's at, so to speak. The word avatar, you guys probably know, is a Sanskrit word that means literally the descent of God.
Right.
In this context, a descent is figurative, of course, meaning the descent, so to speak, of the fully awake God state into his own dream, if you want to go with that. And I think I said something about this sequence to Giuseppe at one time. There is a cycle of avatars as they come on the earth and live a life as God in human form. And Baba says that it's a 700 to 1400 year cycle. And the ones that we know about that are within this larger cycle of time are Zoroaster in Persia, Rama in India.
Here's the top of the hour break. We'll be back right after for hour two of the Wisdom Circle.
People's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
The
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, we're back here on the Wisdom Circle. I'm here with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals and Mr. Michael Ivy. And we've been talking spirituality and kind of weaving it together with the world that we live in as well. Giuseppe, where do you want to take things? Why don't you kick things off for us?
Well, I am a big admirer of Michael Ivy. I love down-to-earth seekers. I mean, I am one. I've been doing this for most of my life. I was born and raised a Catholic, went to Catholic grade school for the first 9 years of my primary education, kindergarten to eighth grade. Would have gone
Are
to
you
Catholic
a Jesuit?
High school. Yeah, I am. I'm a Jesuit operative. Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
It's what's funny is so I just love, you know, how people and Scorpio, clearly you're a seeker as well. And so I dig the fact that and I have nothing but respect for all religions. I have nothing but respect for any pursuit of knowledge or truth. What I despise is arrogance and ignorance and know-it-alls who do not know much of anything. And so that's what's so refreshing when you come upon people like Michael Ivy, who I now consider a friend, because, you know, in so many ways, you know, you can speak and discuss with Michael any topic, you know, and he's got some kind of salient insights, much like you, Scorpio. That's why we work so well together on these radio shows. You know, there's no ego involved. You know, some people, including on Revolution Radio, they have non-trivial egos, which is fine. I mean, that's if that's how you got to motorboat around the Great Lake of Life, that's fine. But it, I mean, to me, it just gets in the way. And so, Michael, I'm curious as to your take on the last 8 months. So, you know, in February, I went to see a really cool band called Crack the Sky. They were should have been huge, but like so many other people, they 1975 Rolling Stone album of the year. The reason I'm bringing that up is Scorpio's a musician. I'm a musician, singer, songwriter, and so is Michael. And he actually is part of a professional studio down in Asheville, North Carolina, which probably isn't doing too much biz now because of the whole COVID scamdemic. But Crack the Sky, 1975 album of the year, kind of like American prog, kind of like Kansas, but more guitar based. Rolling Stone gave them the album of the year in 75 and then didn't sell all that well, but they never gave up. And here these guys are in their upper 70s, right? And they still will play 3 hours live nonstop. It's one of awesome, awesome live shows. And, you know, they sell out, but they're only playing to like 200 people or less in these little clubs. And it's funny, but so then that was February. Life is, and then all of a sudden early March, went to see on, I think it was March 7th or 8th, one of my all time favorites, the guitarist for Genesis when they were real prog, Steve Hackett, played at the Lincoln Theater downtown in the District of Criminal. And you could already tell, man, it had come out, the whole propagandistic scam of COVID-19. What was it? And we were all like, should we go to the concert? My wife and I and my neighbor across the street, the three of us went. It's like, I'm like, yeah, let's go. You know, I can treat any of this stuff. I'm not really too frightened by it as long as we jump on it early. That's the key in Oriental medicine. Is any type of cold or flu, you jump on it immediately when it's in its incipient stage and you drive it out of the body, you boost the immune function. So anyway, Michael, that's kind of a long-winded way to question you. You know, you're going along in Asheville, North Carolina, probably working at the studio, and all of a sudden this insane attack on our reality, the greatest psychological operation since 9/11, drops. And what were your thoughts when it all happened?
Yeah, first I want to say thanks, Scorpio. I consider you a friend as well. I mean Giuseppe, but I guess you could include Scorpio in that too. I've listened to you talk quite a lot, Scorpio, over the last few months.
Well, we'll work on it. I consider you a spiritual brother.
Cool. Let's see. So this is kind of what I do anyway, is I research the sources that I've developed over the years most every day. And it used to be the case that I put out maybe 3 or 4 mailings to my mailing list per week. But this came down so fast and so hard, it really set me off. So as you said earlier, Scorpio, now I do 2 or 3 a day. And back when this first hit, I sort of watched it develop, but didn't hear anything other than what we were being told on the mainstream media until the shutdown happened. The shutdown happened on March the 13th, and it was a St. Patrick's Day, and that really pissed me off because I like to go have a beer in the evening. So it took me, I got it a lot faster this time than I did 9/11. It only took me about a week before I realized what was going on, and I started telling people, look, this is not a pandemic. This is the descent of tyranny under the cover of a pandemic.
Ah, well said. Exactly.
Yeah, well stated.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you think they're trying to take this? Because, you know, Michael, I'm seeing a lot of positive signs right now. For example, you know, just the other day, like 500 doctors in Germany have come out and said, look, this is a scam. I don't know if you've heard about this, but 500 doctors in Germany are totally disputing this. They're saying this is not a pandemic and we're being played.
Yeah, Giuseppe can tell you, I've sent all this stuff out to my list. You're right. You're right. There are some really good people stepping forward, and there are cracks showing in their armor. Their biggest armor, of course, is near total control of the mainstream media. It's like the people who are getting it and are starting to fight back, that's where the fight is. It's like between truth and media brainwashing and propaganda. There was another great one that came out, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 days ago, under the title, what was that title? Crimes Against Humanity. And it was a German lawyer. He's kind of half American and German. He says he's licensed in California as well. But I don't know if you've seen that,
right,
Scorpio.
But I just watched that this morning, actually. Yeah.
All right.
Biggest tort case in history.
Yeah, that is killer, you know. And if he's a high-level corporate suing attorney, so if he knows a lot of attorneys in his circle, that's another big crack in their armor. There's the
it is, Michael. And, you know, I was alluding to this earlier. If this scam falls apart, so many other scams are going to be put into question to the general public. So this is right now, we're at the big fight. This is the time for humanity to make a stand, because if we take this, they're going to push us all the way down into the hole of tyranny.
Yep. Yep. I totally agree. This is like, it looks like they've decided to go for it, because there's no, taking their perspective, I can't see any backing up at this point when they've got so many people running around brainwashed, wearing masks, doing themselves harm. They're probably thinking, hey, this is going pretty well. We should go to the next step.
Yeah, we've crossed the Rubicon, no question about it. And it's interesting how Germany is becoming sort of a hot point for questioning this agenda. And I think they figured that they had Germany beaten down very well with, you know, they were responsible for the Holocaust and, they killed 6 million Jews, et cetera. But I think all of these narratives could be put into question once this is exposed. This is kind of exciting in some ways.
Yeah, I agree. It can be if we get a foot in the door. but I'm not all that optimistic about it, because I think they've got stuff like this and opposition war gamed out, and I think that they have some even heavier things that they can throw at us. We just don't know what those are yet.
That's exactly
it. Absolutely.
The U.S. government spends $500 billion with a B, that's half a trillion dollars annually, on bioweapons. So does Russia. So does China. So does the U.K. even. So does France. Even Canada. It's got their own little Doug and Bob McKenzie-like lab going on. And so there are so many things that they can do. The only thing going for us is that, getting into spirituality a bit, you know, the earth is a living biosphere. It's got a consciousness, just like everything has a resonance. And, but many things also have a consciousness. And, you know, a lot of people call it Gaia. And so Gaia doesn't want the annoying little rash on the surface of the skin to kill everything. So it's funny that for 40 years, the United States corporate interests have been trying to, the big pharma vaccine division industrial complex have been trying to release a bioweapon and then be able to follow up with a mandatory vaccine, which will become by a tremendous factor the greatest, most profitable endeavor ever in the history of the planet. For example, right now, Jeff Bezos, is the supposed richest man, the first ever $200 billion net worth guy. But, you know, that's just for public consumption. There's the old families, the dark money. They hold trillions upon trillions of dollars in assets. Even the Rothschilds, publicly known, they own trillions and trillions. But the point I'm getting at is, if they are somehow able to release something that does kill, oh, let's say a couple million in the U.S. and, you know, 100 million worldwide, you will see people lining up in roads 50, 100 miles long with tents, just like John Lennon and George Harrison came back from the dead to reform the Beatles for a one-off concert. That's how long those lines will be for people to get that vaccine. And that's the criminal cabal's wet dream right there. That's what they keep trying. And as Dr. Judy Mikovits has shared on the shows we've done with her, you know, she worked on the whole making it a weapon. You know what they call it? The euphemism, gain of function. Well, you know, it makes it sound like, well, they're in a real high tech lab and they're drilling down to the genetic level. No, you know what they do? They take a mouse brain or a dog kidney or a cat brain, put it in a blender with some tissue samples that have a virus already, like the coronavirus, blend it up, spread it on petri dishes and see what happens. And then, you know, they do that thousands upon thousands of times. And eventually, you know, what might be a natural cross species viral jump could take 500 years to happen, might never happen. They make it happen in less than a year. So it's crimes against humanity. It's satanically evil. And that's what they're hoping to do. Why? Getting to my original point. Why? It's because right now, Jeff Bezos, Amazon, is the biggest company on the face of the earth, you know, has profits, which they hide because they don't pay any taxes, of billions of dollars a year. If this were to happen, this satanically evil goal of killing millions and turning the world into a desperate beggars for a mandatory vaccine, that will make the annual profit of the vaccine criminal cabal in the trillions, that's a T, trillions of dollars annually. That will make Jeff Bezos and Amazon or Alibaba in China look like corner groceries. That's why they're doing this.
Yes, if things continue to go their way, that will happen. I guess that's the pessimistic outlook, is that they will continue to go their way. I do have an optimistic side to me, and it does have to do with spirituality as well, or maybe just a longer overview. And that basically consists of the fact that it's a very unpredictable, wide and wiggly world out there. And it's often the case that evil planning like this doesn't work. It could work. And Mayor Baba, to get back to him, says that in the near future there's going to be a new humanity, but that for us to get there, this wave of chaos and destruction has to rise higher. So I don't know what it's going to look like, and I don't know what we're going to have to go through. Maybe we won't be in these bodies, but we'll reincarnate in others on the other side of this. But I think this is a wave that eventually of greed and power hungry, you could say satanic people, because Satan is characterized by greed, lust, and anger like that. And I'm not saying Satan as a metaphysical being, but I'm saying the figurative Satan is characterized by those characteristics, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. Do you think there is some type of entity like that? Or, I mean, it could possibly be, I don't know if you believe in extraterrestrials. It could be some kind of reptilian overlord that's named Satan, or some kind of metaphysical entity. What are your thoughts on that?
Those are sort of two different questions. One is the alien aspect or the reptilian aspect. I've heard that discussed quite a lot over the years. You know, David Icke brought that to the fore way back in the 90s. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I have to go with logic and my own evidence and experience. And that leads me to say, I don't know whether that's the case or not. I do know that I haven't been presented with enough direct evidence to say yes to that. And the other part of the question was, is there like a metaphysical aspect of what evil in the world? Satan, the devil? Is that what the question is? Is there?
Yeah. There's some type of dark force that exists within the universe that the question is putting your finger on it, you know, more precisely what that is.
Well, that's true. When I think along those lines, I sort of go along with the Buddhist concept of Maya. So if you guys are, I'm sure you guys are familiar with that. It's roughly translated as illusion, but when God realized or spiritually realized beings talk about Maya, they don't talk about just illusion in the terms of, in the simplest term that we think about it. They speak of illusion being a force that keeps us riveted to the physical, to the negative mental characteristics like greed, lust, and anger. So if you think of Maya as a metaphysical force that's sort of in opposition to truth, yes, I'd say I definitely believe in that. Baba says,
yeah, there's plenty of evidence for it, certainly, yes.
But Baba says about Maya that he didn't come to destroy Maya. He came to make us all aware of its nothingness. So it's up to each one of us to orient our thinking in that way and to keep That's God true. In mind, as opposed to belief in any kind of spiritual entity called a devil or a Satan.
Yeah, absolutely. And to recognize our own shadow side, our own shadow self. Got a good comment here from one of the chatters. Thundersteel 1988 said, "We need wisdom circles around each Dem state." That's a good one. I like it.
Cool. All right. Let's see. Seems like something came up. On the subject of what we're looking at, and, you know, we talked about a pessimistic side that might happen and an optimistic side that might happen. I keep being reminded of a novel that I read back in the late 70s, I believe. It was a Stephen King novel called The Stand. You guys familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. That's
a massive book.
I mean, that's scenario has so much in common with what we're experiencing right now. You know, as you remember in the book, this release of some bioweapon wipes out like 96% of humanity. And then the remnants, those who are left, are gathered together psychically for a final confrontation. And just that whole general scenario seems so much like what we're experiencing right now.
Oh man, no kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're less optimistic about the outcome. You know, I kind of vacillate myself in terms of that. It's some days I feel more positive, other days I don't. You know, when I encounter one of these people that's walking around with a mask or is just, you know, the masking's turning into a religion for some people. And they really think, oh, we have to do this. So, yeah, this is to protect each other. Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I don't know. It's
that's exactly
depends
what
on it, what day you ask me, I guess.
It's showing to others that you believe, that you have adopted this belief system of the killer virus. It is a religious-like activity.
You're right. It's a talisman of sorts. It's a talisman of submission and a talisman of fear. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm just as afraid as you are. Look, I'm wearing this black mask. And why? That's something I asked on Fetzer's show the other day. Why are 3/4 of the masks you see black? Does that have some occult significance?
I think it's thinning for the face.
Yeah,
you know,
it shows support for Black Lives Matter. Perhaps.
you mean it's a cosmetic idea?
Yes, black is thinning. The
one thing I find disturbing about these masks too is, you know, the other day this guy just sort of no casually came up to me in town and said, "Hey, look at the new mask I bought. I thought this would look really good on me," and I was like. I kept quiet, but I was deeply disturbing to think people are so adaptable to this idea that we need to wear a mask. And, well, you might as well look good if you're going to wear one.
Yeah, I just thought that the other day when I was looking at the Natural News website. They have some good stories and expressions on there, but there they are selling customized masks. So I said, what the hell are you doing that for?
Yeah,
well, I'm pretty sure that doesn't he buy into the COVID agenda or COVID narrative?
My understanding is that he's a blend, that he definitely does buy into the COVID narrative that there is a killer virus going around, but he also acknowledges all the tyrannical aspects of the shutdown. So. Adams has always been a kind of blend. He never learned a truer World War II history, specifically about the Holocaust,
right?
And Germany. He brings that up occasionally as holding up the Nazis as the worst thing that's ever happened to the world. So he never learned that, and he has learned that climate change is a fraud. So he's a mix. You'll find quite a few guys like that out there.
That's an interesting point, Michael. He, being Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, he has a great deal of fear about the power of the bioweapon industry. I think that's what really freaks him out. And he really believes in this whole end times apocalyptic scenario, and he's always championing prepping and being ready to deal in a post-apocalyptic world. And I don't know. I don't share that view. I think that people have been saying it's the end of the world on this date for decades upon decades, actually century after century. It's going to end here. It's going to end there. And it doesn't. And we're 6,000 years in. I mean, at some point, something's going to happen. I mean, Dr. Zach Bush, who's just a fascinating wise Western-trained MD, says what we're doing with the poisons of glyphosate and Monsanto and the genetically modified foods and all the garbage, we're creating the sixth extinction level event, the first time humans have ever done it. Usually it's an asteroid or something, another planet passing by or what have you. But, you know, that's to me what's so disappointing is that the average person is, I believe, in the world is purposefully and trained and kept at about a 6 to 8 year old psychological, emotional, and spiritual level. There's no path anymore. There's no wisdom path. There's no guild to like teach you to be an adult and learn from your elders. Now, especially in the Western disgusting globalist world, we champion the young who are so stupid and so quick because of the computer games to be able to ascertain their reality, but they lack wisdom, they lack pragmatism, and they're so bought in to this Soros color revolution, and they're going to change the world. And the funny thing is they don't understand who their real enemy is, and because they're kept so immature, they can't understand and they can't revolt against their actual owners.
That's an excellent point, Giuseppe. In as you know, there's been a systematic destruction of what we call the nuclear family and the primary building block of our society called the family for how long has it been going on? 100 years? And with that destruction of the family is the destruction of the wisdom tradition that honors the life experience and the gained knowledge of older people.
That is so true, Michael. That's part of the youth culture that we've been sold. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was definitely part of ours. When, like in the 60s, the funny byword was you can't trust anybody over 30. Do you remember that? I don't know how old you guys are. I'm 70.
Oh yeah, I remember as a little boy in the 60s, that was a big they didn't call it a meme then, but that was a big counterculture slogan. It was thought to be a slogan back then.
Right. Yep. The death of the wisdom tradition.
And that's completely intentional and so sad and good old Jim Fetzer taught logic for many, many years. And, you know, there's such an obvious, easy, logical, you know, like logic 101 exercise. If you wear a masks and, which is like a plus sign, masks work, then you should be safe from me not wearing a mask. That's like logic 101 and people can't even process that. And it's the same stupidity with the soccer moms of the world, the, cat ladies of the Democratic, it's not even the Democratic Party, it's the left color revolution and train party, where your child can't play with mine because your child is unvaccinated. Well, let's go to logic 101. If vaccines work and your child is vaccinated, then your child should be safe and my child unvaccinated is at risk. But you know, they can't think. They literally cannot critically think. It's just, that is infuriating to me. And it's intentionally done by the globalist parasites.
Oh, yes. Yes, all this is intentional. It's quite evil. Do you guys know who, speaking of vaccines, do you guys know who Andrew Wakefield is?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Vaxxed phenomenon.
He's got a new movie called The Act, 1986, about the law that was passed in the Reagan administration that exempted vaccine manufacturers from any liability. And it's supposed to be really good. And he's going to be here, a town just to the west of Asheville called Waynesville, on Friday night. And give a what do you call it? The first showing of a movie. There's a word for that. Premiere. Premiere of it and have a live Q&A. So I'm definitely going to that.
Oh, how cool is that? What time is that?
It's scheduled for 6 to 9:30. Oh, and here's an interesting tidbit about it. Where you sign up for it, they give you a ticket, and then they're not going to tell people, they're not going to put out exactly where it's occurring until like the day of. So they're that protective of there being some action to break it up.
The revolution has begun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, that's a real fear on their part. He's a big name and he's anti-vaccine and he's going to show information that's even more anti-vaccine than his reputation. So there's a real fear that if they know exactly when and where that's going to happen, they're going to send out people to break it up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. I want to hear about that when you have more information, because this vaccine thing is huge. And if they ever do get some kind of mandatory vaccine for people, it will not be a one-time thing. You're going to need a new one every single year. And I believe that they're going to make it more deadly, put some kind of slow kill mechanism in it, make it worse and worse each year.
Yep. Yep, those are the big possibilities.
What's shocking is that what they can do with this nanite and these nanotechnologies now, so you don't even know what the heck's going in there. And the other utterly vulgar and despicable aspect is any vaccine that a sheeple gets, it turns them into Typhoid Mary, and they become a spreader for anywhere from a week to 2 weeks. That's why when some buffoon gets a flu vaccine, which is what is a trigger for the nasty bioweapon SARS-CoV-2, that's one of the main reason healthy people, and there aren't too many, are getting it, is because it's in the vaccines, the trigger, that is. And so it's so ridiculous that these people are going to be walking all around. But what I hope Scorpio so brilliantly pointed out in hour one, which is they've gone all in like the ESPN late night poker championships. They got all their chips in on this right now. And hopefully that it all blows up in their face. It all falls apart. I hope that it becomes obvious. And, you know, in my mind, there's way too many shitheads on this planet. So if a couple million die from vaccines, you know, thank you for serving the greater good and helping to transform this planet. And I hope that if that happens, then the people wake up, rip off their masks, demand that the vaccine companies be held liable. Right now, they kill 2 million people. It's like, oh, sorry, get in line for the vaccine kangaroo court in America. Over in Europe, sorry, you got no recourse. You know, hey, we're protected. We're made men. We're made vaccine men. We got the protection. And so that has to end, because even, you know, Del Bigtree and Robert Kennedy Jr. and Judy Mikovits, they're always really tactful, saying that if they could just be held accountable in litigation, you know, we would get safe vaccines. And they're just being respectful of the fact that much they don't want to be labeled as you're an anti-vaxxer. But the reality is, if that protection goes away, they will all be sued out of business. And what will rise like a phoenix is smaller companies that may have some type of actual useful inoculant. I doubt it, but you know, that's the only way they could come back at that point. So that's what I hope happens. I really hope this blows up in their faces like a miswired a brick of C4.
Yeah, that would be an excellent progression of events. It reminds me of a saying that a good friend in Texas told me recently that she heard was Satan always overplays his hand. So maybe they're in the process of overplaying their hand right now. I know just the tyrannical measures are waking up a lot of people.
Oh, I think, yeah, I've heard that said about a certain tribe of people as well. They always overplay their hand.
Yeah.
Satanenberg, Satanowitz.
Well, Michael, I want to get your take. What do you think is going on with this whole, you know, show of Trump has COVID and then suddenly 2 days later he's fine and now he's out of the hospital? And, you know, where do you think Trump fits into this whole equation and this phony show we're watching? I mean, the guy didn't look the least bit sick. If this is some deadly disease, you know, you're going to look like crap on camera. So what do you think's going on there?
Well, I've addressed that very thing on the shows that Giuseppe and Fetzer and I do. And your characterization of it as show makes the most sense to me of anything. I think I went through the other day. I don't have them before me right now. But as soon as I heard about this thing and him going to Walter Reed and then coming back out in 3 or 4 days, it would be one thing if he didn't take it all that seriously and got over it and everything that we're seeing on the surface is correct. But it seems to me like there's too many subtexts at work here. Like, one of the subtexts that I don't like is that he is supposed to have taken this great remdesivir and some other drug, experimental drug. And he comes out saying, oh, these are great. These are great. Now, that's bullshit. And his promoting that kind of thing that might have been part of the show that they're putting on. I don't know. I don't know what kind of game they're playing, but it feels like a show to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, one takeaway message here is that we have to have big pharma treatments in order to survive COVID. Otherwise, we're all screwed and we're going to die.
Yeah. And he could have said something about hydroxychloroquine, but no, they never mentioned that word. And there were a couple of aspects about that situation that I didn't like, that I didn't agree with. And I thought, you know, Trump just feels like an actor on a stage to me.
Man, that's exactly it. I feel like, you know, good old the Donald, the man who makes all the deals, was given an offer. Donald, you've come a little too close to supporting the natural cures. And do you want to a second term? Well, then you need to put on a little show that shows how much you support big pharma solutions. Do you not want to do it? Well, then you're going to die of COVID pretty soon. And I think they gave him a talking to, and he made the choice. Choose life.
Maybe they made him an
choose life
offer he can't refuse. Yeah, Donald, we got an offer for you.
I think you're going to like it. Yeah. All right.
I mean, addressing your lucid observation that it feels like a show, these days it seems more and more like everything surrounding this insane psychological operation is more and more like a show. The violence and the totalitarian boot on the throat antics that are going on in Australia, the petty tyrant initiatives of Fredo Cuomo in New York, and the big Yeti Governor Whitmer in Michigan, and the Monty Python twit Gavin Newsom in California. Doesn't he just look like he'd be the perfect guy to be in that sketch of the twit sketch, the Twit Olympics? I mean, that guy just looks like such a twit, such an empty suit airhead, and such a propped up nothing. And but yet they're all like mini Stalins in their states. It's just insane, don't you believe, fellas?
Well, oh, yeah. Gavin Newsom looks like the kind of guy you wouldn't buy a used car from. You know, he's totally looks like just a grease bag, man. Terrible.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And Gretchen Whitmer, I think of two things when I see her ugly visage, and that is the movie that had the, oh, it was 101 Dalmatians, Cruella de Vil, that character.
And, oh, yeah, you're right.
And the other one is, what Morticia of the Addams Family.
And the third one that pops up in my mind is she's the nasty, big, huge girl in roller derby who knocks the opponents over the rail and hurts them.
Oh,
yeah, there you go.
Another one came to mind, and that is in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Nurse Ratched.
Oh, that's probably the best one right there. Yeah,
Nurse Ratched. Yeah.
Does Ratched rhyme with rat shit?
It does not.
Close.
It's pretty close, huh?
Yeah. So, Michael, do you think we're heading for a President Harris? I mean, Joe Biden presidency, or are we going to see Trump 2.0?
Oh man, how should I know? Do you think I can see the future? I don't know what these people.
Well, look
want.
Into your crystal ball, man.
I'm not happy with either one of them. I guess I'd be a little happier with another 4 years of Trump, because he seems to be less anxious to put the boot of tyranny down on everybody's head. But I can't imagine being under somebody like Kamala Harris. She's as evil as evil gets, as far as I can read. I can hardly look at her. Do you guys intend to watch the debate tonight?
Well, actually, Scorpio, now that you have a live stream, Jim Fetzer and I are going to live stream coverage. Would you like to be a part of that?
Oh, yeah. I'll be there, man. I want to see the clown show.
Okay. All right. So I will add you as a third.
I'll definitely watch you guys.
Okay, awesome. All right.
We'll give you the real commentary, not the phony commentary, man.
Exactly. I'll turn my TV off.
Yeah. You got to look at it as a comedy show too, you know. It's sort of a slapstick comedy, I think. What's interesting about Joe Biden is he's promising a nationwide mask mandate indoors and outdoors. And I think that's one campaign promise that will be kept.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Scorpio, did you happen to catch any of the town hall he did on Monday night?
Is that the one where he had like five people sitting inside of a circle and then some guy had a car parked in front of the stage as well? Is that the one?
I don't remember seeing the car. I came in on the... about the middle of it, but what flipped me out about it was with Lester Holt of NBC. Is that what you saw?
You guys are describing two different events. Scorpio's talking about the one that occurred about a week ago where it was focused on the Mexican community, and the one that Michael's talking about was just broadcast like 2 days ago where Jim Fetzer believes we have a body double now. Because this new Biden is really animated and engaged and has lots of energy.
That's where I was going with that, Giuseppe.
Interesting.
You know, I've seen what Biden is like over the last year. You know, he's been in the headlines and made lots of public appearances and stammered and made crazy statements every time he shows his face. Well, this guy that they're using now is not like that at all. I mean, he rattled off so many names and so many different ideas one after another and immediately making good, cogent sentences. That is not Joe Biden, the guy they put up there on that that town hall on Monday night.
Interesting. I'll have to check that out. I'll look at that. Very
you can probably find it online. You'd only have to look at about 10 minutes of it to know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Of course, Fetzer.
Did you watch that, Giuseppe?
No, I have not watched it yet. But I have to say, in Need to Know the Fetzer Report, our daily worldwide broadcast of the new Jim News commentary and analysis show, Jim made his point early in the week, and I pushed back. I was a little skeptical, but then he came back yesterday and he found a side-by-side picture of the real Biden, who has blue eyes, very obvious blue eyes, and the one who did the debate had brown eyes. And I'm like,
Right.
You know, that's pretty compelling.
Yeah, and also I've seen pictures of two different Joe Bidens, and one of them, the earlobes connect to the side of the face. The other Joe Biden, they're separated, and that's not something that changes with age or, you know, how you comb your hair.
Yeah, I maintained to Jim Fetzer that could be done because Biden is a vain dude. He's had like, you know, a dozen hair plug surgeries over the years, and he's had a lot of plastic surgery. And when you do enough of those skin pullbacks, tighten the face, I wonder if that could make the earlobes change. I don't know, but to me, that's the only way. But other, because typically ears are as distinctive as fingerprints; they're unique to everyone.
Right.
Well, you know, there's no doubt that they were using body doubles for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So with Biden in the mental shape that he's in, why wouldn't they hear?
No doubt. I agree.
Yeah, why not?
They sure found a guy who's really fast thinking on his feet, though. It's like he's too good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're used to what Biden was like and you watch this guy for 15 minutes, you go, wait a minute, what is going on here?
You know, it's interesting. With the final 6-7 minutes we have left, what do you guys think is, you know, clearly the globalist banksters are two-sided, like this, the legendary kosher sandwich. The Zionist banking slice of the kosher sandwich clearly wants Trump. And the color revolution, George Soros, Bolshevik communist side wants Biden badly. And so who do you think, which slice is going to win?
Well, Michael, you take that first.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Scorpio, you take that.
Oh, no, okay. I'll go first. No problem. You know, if you look at it from the point of view of the conspirators, I just think that Joe Biden is the better pick, because we're not going to have any resistance towards climate change anymore, because, you know, Trump has said we're not going to go along with the Paris Accord. Joe Biden certainly will. And there's going to be no resistance to the COVID agenda. And the two agendas dovetail together. They're really the same agenda. They're all part of this United Nations Agenda 2030.
Right.
So I'm thinking at this point, it looks like Biden's going to be the pick, especially if they cheat. They've got to do a lot of cheating to get there, though.
Well, right. Well, Giuseppe's question was prefaced on like one faction of the Jewish control structure being Israeli, wanting Trump there. So what you're saying is that the factors that you just outlined will push the decision over to the other side?
Well, yeah, because I think they want to unveil this black, you know, they want to continue with this Black Lives Matter thing and you know, all that far left agenda, the new Green Deal, all of that. It all dovetails together into one big agenda. And Trump has been resistant towards certain parts of that. And he has a remarkable talent for saying the right thing at the wrong time, you know?
Yeah. And it's also the case that that if Biden goes in there, that doesn't mean he's going to be anti-Israel or anti-anything Israel wants. It's just that the Israelis and Netanyahu have seemed to fall in love with Trump over the last 4 years.
Oh yeah, and don't forget, Joe Biden has proudly proclaimed that he's a Zionist.
Oh yeah, yeah. So is that a good enough answer to your question, Giuseppe? We're figuring it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's just take it the next step. Scorpio kind of touched on it a little bit, which is a Biden presidency. How authoritarian will it be, or will it be like business as normal? Because remember, Trump was promising the white nationalists, we're going to pull out of Israeli wars. We're going to bring back manufacturing. We're going to build a wall. And, you know, he did build 300 miles of a wall, but nothing else. So what do you think the worst case scenario for a Biden presidency is? And what do you think is the middle, the practical middle of a Biden presidency?
Well, I think the worst case scenario is real bad because the left has just gotten crazy. I mean, they're really I can't even say that because I wasn't there and I know what happened. But it could be as bad as the Bolshevik Revolution. We've been taught to call it. It was actually the Bolshevik invasion of Russia. And that involved just killing everybody that they didn't like.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we're seeing hints of that already, Michael. I think it's a very astute observation. Absolutely. And I think part of the reason they're bringing forward all these crazy ideologies is that they're designed to fail because they want to completely take the system down as we know it, and they already have a new system that they're going to put into place.
Yeah, I think they might have in mind the pretty much complete meltdown of the United States Republic, because the United States has been, in spite of all our tyrannical actions in the world, philosophically and in terms of law, the United States has been the standing beacon in the world for individual rights. And I think they want to take the whole thing down so that they can, as you say, come back with their solution of a world government.
You know, we haven't even mentioned two huge pillars of this new dystopian reality they're trying to build, which is the Great Reset and the new normal.
The right. Church of the new normal.
Yes, with Dr. Strangelove, I mean Klaus Schwab, being the head of the world.
That's a good one. He is the current Dr. Strangelove, all right.
Yeah, without and don't forget, if we do get Biden president, we'll have, really, it'll be a Kamala Harris presidency. And if you don't like anything she does, you're both a racist and a misogynist.
Yep. Right. Oh, man, what a woman to be the first female president of the United States. Wow.
Oh, yeah. God. Oh, my God.
So, Michael, we're down to the last minute. What are your final thoughts, sir?
Well, let's see. One final thought is that I would have a lot more territory to cover regarding Meher Baba's life and teachings if you guys wanted to have me back.
Oh, man, we would love to have you back. Absolutely.
This is just the maiden voyage, Michael.
I didn't realize that we were going to get into a bunch of other topics, so I had quite a lot ready to go.
Okay, well, there's the music. Michael, we'll definitely have you back on. It was a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time. And thanks to everyone listening. And we'll see you guys next week.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
All right, bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.